Hey, hi. Welcome to Someone Else's Movie, the podcast where an actor, writer, director, or nebulous industry figure gives a little love to a movie they didn't make. I'm Norm Wilner, senior film writer for Now Magazine, and this is the other thing I do. My guest this week is Jean Grey, a polymath who's equally at home writing, performing, and producing hip-hop, as she is working as an actor, director, and occasional internet bailiff for Judge John Hodgman over at Maximum Fun. Her latest album, released in late August, is called Seven. When I caught up with her in Manhattan earlier this month, she'd just come from a panel at New York Comic Con called Music by Nerds, with Jonathan Colton, Quelly Chris, and Pollen Storm. Jean chose Fight Club, David Fincher's revolutionary 1999 adaptation of Chuck Palahniuk's cult novel about an office drone who experiences a major life adjustment when he makes the acquaintance of the charismatic Tyler Durden, and they embark on an aggressive new form of cultural deconstruction. Featuring Brad Pitt, Edward Norton, and Helena Bonham Carter as no one had ever seen them before, Fight Club was one of the most important movies of its moment, although no one realized it at the time. Kind of snuck up on us. And now that other things have snuck up on America, there's a new moment, and it's just as relevant. We'll get into it. This is someone else's movie.
Fight Club, you know, I read the book, and when I saw the movie, I was still in the period of my life where I was smoking a lot of weed.
Okay.
Which I have definitely stopped doing, and I don't actually know. Like, I've tried to smoke weed since then, and it's horrible. It's horrible every time. I'm like a really bad paranoid. I just immediately start thinking, like, 2 seconds into weed, I'm like, oh no, and I'm like, oh, this is gonna be here for hours. I realize this is not my drug of choice.
When did it change? Was there an incident? Was there any kind of...
No, not an incident or anything. Just, I hosted the Cannabis Cup, like, right when I was like, oh, I'm not smoking weed anymore, which is a really weird decision to make, because you can't... There's just no way. There's no way.
Yeah.
They're, like, pumping it out of fucking vaporizers on stage.
Yeah, you're gonna osmosis it, if nothing else.
It's ridiculous. And some part of my adulting kicked in, and I was like, I have to pick my vices, and I don't think I can get as much work done. Like, I've smoked all the weed there is to in the world as the judge and host of the Cannabis Cup.
Right.
So now I'm good.
So you peaked.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. You're not going to do anything else after that. But I was really, really high the first time I saw it. And so, like, you know, the entire opening sequence, and it's taking you, and I was like, oh man, what is that? What the fuck is this shit? So I was in it. Like, I was inside of it. And I thought it was immediately the most brilliant thing I'd ever seen. And I was like, as a fan of ultraviolence, it did it in a different way. Since then, I realized that a lot of my life is very Fight Club on purpose.
Okay.
I blew up my own apartment. No.
We call that artistic justice.
Yeah. Included a lot of Tyler Durden references and things into rap lyrics, and definitely over the past decade. And I was like, well, people really don't notice that I talk about Fight Club a lot. And then that was kind of sad, because I was like, oh, that does the whole female rap thing, that you're so much more interested in calling me that you miss all of the things I'm talking about.
Right.
I tend to talk to people a lot when I see them in places, and I started doing a thing, and I didn't realize I was doing it until I said to myself a year later, like, I'm Tyler Durdening. Oh, okay, I did not mean to do this.
Just assuming another...
No, there's the scene where he takes the dude outside and he's, and you think he's going to kill him, and he takes his ID. And he's right. Like, what did you want to be? You wanted to be a veterinarian. So if you're not on your way to becoming a veterinarian in a year, I'm going to come back and I'm going to kill you. I've only threatened one person with murder, but it became a thing wherever I would go, wherever I was on the road, if it was a restaurant or a hotel or just after the show, mm-hmm. and talking to people and being like, what do you do? But what do you really do? And why aren't you doing that shit? So I'm going to take your information and I'm going to keep up with you. And I'm basically might threaten violence or not. But you have to start doing that thing.
Yeah. And how has it paid off? I mean,
it has. I just said earlier to Jonathan, I was like, you know, so far I've got a comedian and a baker, which is awesome. We've been like, I'm going to quit and do this. And then I like the idea of starting a cult.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's great. Which I'm also doing, starting on Sunday. So yeah, I might be taking it too far.
Okay, well, for our listeners in the future, because this will clearly be part of some historical record by the time it's released. What cult are you starting on Sunday?
Let's not call it a cult, you guys. For a long time, I've wanted to kind of start services.
Oh, that's right. You had yourself ordained.
Mm-hmm. I did. I actually had ordained myself a while ago, and then had to do it again because New York laws require only recognize certain churches, certain online churches, and then you have to go get your wedding officiant thing. So I had to get that done. So yeah, as a repeated ordained minister, I think it's important to let creative people or people who don't necessarily want it to be about religion or anything else just have a place to be like, you need to remember that you're super fucking powerful and that you have to do all of these things. So that's starting.
So it's, let's call it an incubator instead of
I was putting together sermons and picking songs. I'm like, all right, I'm definitely giving people homework. I'm like, oh, here we go with the Project Mayhem.
Yeah, now that you mention it.
Yeah.
But, of course, the beauty of it is you get to be fully aware of what you're doing, so
yes.
There's a little distance.
Yeah, I think the idea of, there's so many things in the grand scheme of Fight Club, but I think the idea of, you know, that he had to be so disconnected from himself in order to do those things, which is something that I talk about a lot, and saying you have to be all of you all the time.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting to watch, you know, how far people will go to not be all of themselves, even if I don't feel like it's destructive. I don't feel like, you know, it was an interesting way to go about it, but sometimes you have to take measures.
Yeah, it's interesting that the film, I'm trying to remember who said it, because it should have been me, but I couldn't articulate it. Someone else came up with it first. It's a major studio film
mm-hmm.
with a then A-list director, still mm-hmm. an A-plus lister, because Fincher's only just evolved further,
mm-hmm.
Making a movie that says, you know, like it's a giant corporation making a movie that says don't trust giant corporations, yeah. But there are safeties built into it that are really interesting, like the way we're told explicitly that the buildings they're blowing up are empty,
right?
And, you know, it's not that kind of thing, and you really are only supposed to feel the one beating when Jack goes after Jared Leto,
right,
Angel Face, and reduces him to a pulp. All the other violence is pretty positive. Other characters are frightened by it, and the people with guns pointed at their faces are frightened, but
right.
Then they're ultimately, we're supposed to believe they're going to better themselves in the end.
To better themselves, except that, and then you break it. Well, that and Lou, that was not
That's
that. That went badly.
Yeah.
But you know, well, again,
name,
that was
his name was Robert Paulson.
His name was Robert.
His name was Robert Paulson. I'm sorry. I couldn't
help that. No, it's fine.
I was right. Yeah, because that's someone who believes it too much, and the fascinating thing about the construction of the movie to me is that it. You know, we're going to go right into spoiler territory. Don't feel like an adult.
You know what? If
can you spoil
things? I do. Someone on Twitter, and someone made some comment about it was an Empire Strikes Back, and someone was like, "I haven't watched," and they were like, "If you don't get the entire fuck out of here,
yeah,
with your you haven't seen the Empire
it's
Strikes
been 36
Back."
Years.
Spoilers. Please shut up.
Even if you're not that old, you have no excuse. And the other thing, though, and I couldn't believe this when they did it. There's a generation now that's going to watch Empire, because to not know that, I guess you'd have to not have seen the first four movies. So, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the Lucas revisions was that he actually spoils it himself, because in that new scene between Vader and the Emperor, the old scene that they reshot with Ian McDiarmid, they explicitly say the son of Skywalker, well, you know, he is your kid, Vader. Well, yes, all right, fine. Like, they're actually talking about it before the revelation.
Yeah, we're just going to do it. And it's fine, because it should be fine. It should be okay to do that.
But
clearly some people don't. So yes, spoiler alert.
People need bubbles. People live in
spoiler alert
Fight Club. It is...
Or Mr. Robot, as they're calling it now.
Yeah, no kidding. I didn't even watch the show because I knew what it was. The second I saw the pitch.
I didn't. And I saw everybody else get into it. Mm-hmm. And I got... Like, the first episode, I was like... Very Fight Club-y. And then by the seventh episode, I was yelling and being like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you really just doing this? And then they did Where Is My Mind? And I was like, fuck this shit.
Did they really?
They motherfucker. I was like, are you?
That shouldn't.
And then I had to Google it, and I was like, okay. Either this is done, like, with complete consent and everybody knows what they're doing. And he's like, yeah, no, I know what I'm doing. Yeah, it's totally Fight Club. And I was like, okay, so everyone's okay with that? Because I'm not okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, you can be...
Just make your own thing.
Yeah, or you can be derivative the way Tarantino is and, you know, at least put it together
that's
in a way that functions.
Like that, yeah, but... No.
Yeah, no, I saw the pitch for Mr. Robot, and I think maybe I watched a two-minute, like, a trailer, pilot trailer thing.
And you're like, oh, it's Fight Club.
I try to avoid those things. It's like... Oh, okay, he's not real. And Kate, my wife, hadn't seen it. She hadn't seen the trailer. She's like, oh, I want to watch Mr. Robot. Should we watch it? And then the Blu-rays came in, and I was like, here, I'm not. We never watch it. It's like, yeah, I don't think I need to. I think I
No, I'm good.
It.
I think I'm good because I've seen Fight Club. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you how this goes.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about that, though, like Fight Club obviously didn't define the unreliable narrator and the twist, but there was another movie 2 months before Fight Club that I saw at the Toronto Film Festival that year called Fever, directed by Alex Winter, who's the Alex Winter of Bill and Ted, and who's gone on to be a director. Mm-hmm. And he just made a really, really interesting documentary about the dark web a couple years ago.
Really?
Maybe even last year? Yeah. We talked about it at Hot Docs a year and a half ago. And his movie, Fever, has a character played by Henry Thomas, who's befriended by an English a yob, basically, like just a punkish, an older punkish guy, mm-hmm. who exhorts him to do bad things, and it's all in his head. It's the same movie to the point where, I mean, Polanyi obviously wrote his book before either film was made, but it's jarring. And then I saw Fight Club, it's like, oh, this gets it right. This is exactly the way it, like, not that Fever is bad, but it's a low rent, low budget kind of movie, and they didn't have the scope available to them that Fincher and
sometimes you need that.
Yeah.
You need that in order to be able to do that right.
But now that it has been done in 1999, 17 years ago, people should stop. And
we're good.
Yeah.
We're good.
Yeah. We have Fight Club now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it would have been great to, you know, do a little nod to it and something and step away from it. But
sure.
Just to
put up a poster.
Kind of take the whole thing. Yeah, it was very upsetting.
I can imagine.
It was very upsetting. I watched it on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
I then deleted Amazon Prime. I was like, fuck this.
Just out of spite.
Fuck this shit. I don't want anything you have to offer. Do you think this is okay? And I was like, oh, it's kind of on the other streaming services. Whatever. Show them.
Yeah. I have to speak up for Amazon Prime because they do Red Oaks, which a friend of mine is on, so there's that.
It's good. I'll put it back. Yeah, I'll put you back, Amazon Prime. Think about Sorry. It.
But as far as Fight Club being definitive, yeah, I mean, every other film that has followed and tried for that twist, and there are some that aren't bad, that sort of play with it and acknowledge that it's an unoriginal concept now, that it's being done to death. But there aren't many. And for the most part, it's just unnecessary. We have the movie. We have this execution of it that is pretty much the way to tell that story. The thing I love about Fight Club is the film is the way that it kind of keeps telling the truth. I mean, on repeat viewings, you can really see that there are obviously...
Yeah, and it's... And you know, I love something that, you know, whether you're listening to it or it's food and there's, you know, different notes and it tastes different when you reheat it and you notice different things and there's... It took a long time to pick up on all these things and be like, I can even make this something else, and maybe it's not, but there's so many things open to interpretation. There's wonderful, like, it never stops giving stuff to you, and that makes something really beautiful for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the best kind of entertainment is the kind of entertainment that assumes you are at least as smart as it
and, is. And I think that was very important for me, especially I guess that point in like adult life, and I was like, this is not that I've given any fucks, but it's really making me understand that I can really not give any fucks. Like, this is, I'm fine with this. I would totally start a fight. In fact, we should start a fucking Fight Club. it was dirty and grimy and slick in the best way. And I'm like, I understand how you can be, you know, I was like, maybe I'll go live in an abandoned paper factory. That doesn't seem like a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know, but, and also that time in Brooklyn and living in Bushwick and East Williamsburg, and everything is kind of this abandoned factory look, and you're like, I could actually see this happening. It's not really a terrible idea.
Yeah, it's like that slow reclamation hasn't happened yet.
No.
The thing that, there's a documentary called Blank City about the Lower East Side, the 70s and 80s, and how it spawned that wave of of basically American culture, like not just music, but everything that came out of there. Because loft space was cheap and people were coming to New York and they were reinventing themselves. And Fight Club doesn't quite have the same, like, it's bristling with potential, but it's there's not that much joy. Like the glee, the glorification of the lifestyle is very different.
Just even, you know, the color of it, and also for me, it was a time where I was touring a lot, and it was that you're always on a plane, you keep going, and immediately he was like, you know, and you don't know what city you're waking up in, and I was like, I absolutely understand that.
Yeah.
And I've definitely seen that fracture people and them not being able to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, there were more things as I kept watching it, and I was like, I shouldn't be able to relate to this. I don't know how good that is, that, you know, this is a relatable movie for me in a lot of instances. And just kind of the fuck off to the system and the idea of letting go. You know, even the scene in the car with, you know, you have to learn how to let go.
Right.
And I don't drive, so that wasn't going to be an option for me, and I wouldn't go through that. But I think in a different way, it was a period of my life where I did that and just learned how to...
Just found a different way through.
Make your own. Build something of your own. And if you don't want to fit into the status quo, and that's that's not happening for you, then go build your own shit.
Mm-hmm. So when did you, was it the theatrical release in 99, or did you catch up to it later?
Yeah.
That was, I mean, I was there as a critic. I was just sort of passively receiving all the stuff that was happening. But that third quarter of 1999, when, or the, even the last third, Fight Club, Magnolia,
yeah,
being John Malkovich,
there was a,
Three Kings.
Yeah, there was a lot. Shit.
Was a couple
John
of
Malkovich, yeah, it was probably another one. But it was again, a confirmation of... of being like, none of it's like, it's all of these things that you're not supposed to do, or that doesn't make any sense, or why would that happen? And I'm like, yeah, but those are the things that are the most beautiful.
Yeah,
you know, just because it hasn't been done, and now you're gonna see a bunch of fucking knockoffs.
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
Then that.
It's so depressing to watch something, and it only lasted for 6 months, that wave of creativity, mm-hmm. where it just felt like everything could happen at once, and then it just sort of fizzled out again. Although, you know, like, the directors kept working and they kept making stuff, but that sense that really cinematically America was waking up and anything was possible,
yeah.
right in that window.
And you know, it kept going for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah, that particular time period was, you know, I was just about to start working on my first solo album. I'd moved out of like all the roommates' house, and I'd had a breakup, and I was like, okay, I gotta go find my own apartment. And I couldn't get an apartment anywhere, because as an artist, it's very difficult to, you know, I don't have any pay stubs.
Yeah,
I don't have any credit. I'm like,
rent.
I'd get paid in cash. So I moved back into the Chelsea Hotel and got a studio. And yeah, no one in 1999 should have been paying $2,700 for a studio. And like, I was making okay money, but I was like, ah. This is the only place I can live.
Yeah,
because I don't have
history.
To explain anything. But yeah, it was definitely a time of me coming. It was my coming of age movie.
Yeah.
Terrible coming
no,
of age.
No, I think it's great.
That's
I think,
insane.
I mean, yes. But we all take inspiration from the
yeah.
stuff that we need it from, right?
Yeah.
Like, if it speaks to you, it speaks to you. And,
yeah, absolutely.
And this profoundly white film... You know, like, just with it's all about upper middle class stuff.
Right.
Speaking to other, like, other levels, other people, other everythings. I just find it fascinating how many people have embraced it.
Yeah, it was, you know, and a lot of it was watching him walk in a world that was unaware of
mm-hmm.
him
mm-hmm.
walking. And to me, that was a very normal feeling in everyday life. In my line of business.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was being like, yeah, I really don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck so hard. You have no idea how hard I will kill all of you right now. And you don't even see me. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I can do whatever I want.
I mean, it sounds like a cliche just saying it, but how hard you have to work to register, even in
yeah.
hip hop, in anything, in any art form, and this, like, putting aside everything else, it's just everybody trying to get noticed and everybody trying to get seen, and so much of this is mediocrity that gets seen because it's got the right look.
It's got the right look. It's got the right package. It's got the machine behind it,
yeah, which is again Fight Club.
Yeah,
right?
and again, it was something, you know, of stepping outside of that and saying I'm going to build my own machine to break your machine,
mm-hmm.
You know. And then if you go to something like The Matrix, and it's like climbing inside the machine to break the machine.
Also 1999.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was a lot.
That was a good year.
A lot happened inside of me. And I was like, oh, shit, we can do this.
Yeah. And in The Matrix actually gives the story an out, because there is a malevolent force. Like,
mm-hmm.
there's a consciousness that's running everything and subjugating people. Fight Club is... more disturbing, I think, because there really is no villain. Like, there's
there's no villain except for the others, and the others is just it is a very, you know, Matrix sort of thing, because it's like watching, you know, people wake up one by one.
Yeah, it's an origin story in that way, coming to the truth.
Yeah, and you're not really, you don't really spend a lot of time with the rest of the world. Like, it's just backdrop. Like, maybe it's people at work other than, you know, his boss. You don't really get to see them or touch them because they don't exist, because he didn't exist to them. I understood it very, very much.
Yeah, there's Cronenberg does this. I noticed it with, maybe it was Dead Ringers or Naked Lunch. It was probably Naked Lunch. In most horror films, in most science fiction films, when someone is descending into this, there's a best friend, there's an onlooker, there's a representative of normal who can say, oh,
there's some balance. You shouldn't do this.
Maybe don't get in the pod with the fly. Right. Clean it out. just Febreze it once and see what happens.
Maybe from a distance.
So you have Geeta Davis, and you also have John Stathis Bourne, John Getz, the actor, who's the most rational, saying, "Don't go back to him." And then in Dead Ringers, it gets a little further removed. Jean-Vie Bugeaud is in there to say, "Maybe don't." And then she leaves, and we're stuck with them in this hermetic seal. And then in Naked Lunch, the whole thing is a bug powder hallucination, and we're stuck in it. And since then, he really hasn't bothered. And Butterfly doesn't have it. Crash, there's absolutely no one in that movie who isn't speaking that language. And he just continues to do it, and I find it absolutely fascinating that you're completely rootless. And here, the narrator, sort of, because he thinks he's the straight one,
tries to be that to himself.
Exactly.
Which is even another level. So you're like, there's really three of them. Mm-hmm. And again, a very relatable thing. I was like, I don't have anyone telling me. Like, I've had people be like, you can't do that. And then stepping further back from that, I was like, I'm in a place right now where no one's telling me. Like, that's... maybe not.
Yeah.
Or it's people that I've been involved with so far that if I'm saying let's do something, they just show up and nobody asks any questions and we do it. I'm like, that's... you know, either a great leader or I'm extremely evil. I haven't figured it out.
I don't know if it matters if they trust and support you. And I don't know if it matters that if they're frightened of you, if it's an intimidation thing.
I think, that is a word that I've heard a lot in my life.
Intimidation.
People being intimidated.
Because you can tell them what you want?
I never understood it. I heard it a lot in the rap world, very much in the dating world a lot. And then I think it comes also from the rap world. There are, you know, people who would never ask me to be on a song with them because they don't want to get beat by a girl, and the level of intimidation, or then what that then does to their ego or their reputation. And you know, these are literally dudes who have been like, no, I'm not doing that, or I'm not going after you. And I never understood it. I'm like, either just get better, or you know, just, I don't know what it is about me that feels intimidating to you. What's the issue?
Is it just confidence? I mean, is it their lack of it or your...
I think it's rare to encounter, you know, as much as I related to narrator on many things, I more so related to Tyler. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, okay. What is that really saying about me?
Tyler's the seductive one. Tyler's the one we all want. Like, that's what movies do, right? It's Brad Pitt in an awesome jacket. You kind of want to see what he's going to do next.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm fine with being that person. And I'm fine with being like, yeah, I'm fine with being if you have to, like, blame Gene, which was definitely a thing in my personal life, okay. And just he'd be like, you know, or like, well, like, Gene's doing that. And I'm like, yeah, don't do that. I'm doing that. You can't do the same thing. It's not the same thing. So I related very much to the, I don't care. Not that I don't know that there are consequences and repercussions. I know how this goes. I'm fine with that. I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with the world blowing up, as long as I'm in charge of it.
Okay. So you wouldn't want to follow Tyler? I mean, if someone presented that sort of thing to you, it doesn't appeal?
No, I would never follow anyone.
Cool.
No, that doesn't work out for me. It would go badly for Tyler.
Yeah. I think it's
interesting. It would be a movie with two Tyler Durdens, and then maybe that's more interesting.
I mean, if you're going to... That's something we haven't seen in any of the knockoffs. If you're going to do it, you should overcomplicate, come up with a new angle, and that would be a cool, like, one.
Go for that.
Yeah.
I would watch the shit out of that.
And I've noticed at this point, I just realized we haven't mentioned Marla at all.
We haven't mentioned Marla.
Who is kind of an active participant and kind of not, in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, when I read the book, I couldn't figure out if Planiuk wanted us to believe she existed.
It was tough.
I think it's more...
It was tough. I think she was the most complicated character. Like, even if you got it fucking figured out halfway through the thing, you're like, yeah, but I still don't know what's going on.
What purpose does she serve?
With this Marla situation.
Because narratively, she might not be there.
Yeah.
But I think what's weird is that I think Bonham Carter is so good at personifying that energy that there's no question she's real.
Yeah.
Also because other people see and talk to her.
But, yes, that, you know, that helps.
But in the book, that could be a feint, right? Like, that could be just another trick.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know if you've read Girl on the Train.
I haven't.
The problem with the film adaptation is the conceit of the novel depends on you reading it and picturing it in your head. And as soon as you see it in the film, like, within 2 minutes, it's like, oh, that's this.
You know.
This thing is happening, and it's not even a major spoiler, but it's sort of the first chunk of the film, the first chunk of the narrative that says, what, and reevaluate that. And as soon as you, like, within 2 minutes of the movie, you know what this is, because either the filmmakers are really bad at figuring out a way to change that and to
find
out,
I'm assuming analog, I'm assuming that's what it is, or
they didn't care. Which still,
or they fucking didn't care, which is worse.
Mm-hmm. It is this.
Yeah, there's always a way to do that, but if you're just not going to spend time and you're like, everybody's fucking stupid, it doesn't matter anyway. And again, you know, Fight Club didn't do that.
Yeah.
And it let you have to let go watching them let go. All of Marla's, you know, her in and out interactions always made it so amazing. You know, she's breezing into the store, to the laundromat.
Yes.
It just happens so fast, and then she goes in and she sells the clothes, and then she comes out of the into the kitchen, and her always breezing in and breezing out and delivering her lines that kind of float and hang in the air.
Yeah.
Again, gave you that kind of like, is this happening?
Yeah, what is going on?
Is it happening?
Yeah. It gives
who am I supposed to believe?
Because
I don't feel like I'm, like, any of this is really solid.
Yeah. On repeat viewings, I think she's the one who becomes the funniest and most interesting character, just because your brain is trying to fit her into what you now know. And every time there's another piece of it that's just like, wait, but she's doing this thing that neither Tyler nor the narrator is really connected to, but that means she exists.
That
in
means
my
she
mind.
Exists
she has
because
her own life.
She has her own life. She's totally doing something separate. And, you know, if in your world Marla Singer is the rational person, it's fucked up.
This is what I'm saying
it's
about
fucked up.
The onlooker role.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's not anybody's anchor.
No.
She can't be her
own anchor.
In the sense that an anchor drags you down, yes, maybe. She's more like a cement block.
She's an anvil.
Yes.
She's the anvil.
Speaking of and like, you know, the whole Looney Tunes connections to anvils. Mm-hmm. You must have heard the Calvin and Hobbes theory.
No.
Oh, this is the...
Oh, wait, no, say have. It again, because I think I have.
Yeah, well, it's that Calvin is Jack is the narrator, and Hobbes is Tyler, and Marla, by extension, is therefore Susie Durkins, but it actually works. It works so well, because, of course, Calvin is the only person who can see Hobbes.
Yeah.
And Hobbes is the... Actually, it kind of falls apart when you realize that Hobbes is the rational one, the calm one. The tiger is the one. He likes to go crazy and jump on things, but he also doesn't want to explode things and do all the destructive stuff that Calvin wants to do. But someone wrote, back in the GeoCities days, someone wrote an incredible thousands of words essay about this, exploring it and coming up with reasons. And now it would be like an Alex Jones fever dream where, like, no, if you look at these signs, it's very clear that Hobbes is the personification that Tyler Durden is. Like, he's wearing fur and that kind of thing.
You're like, you get it. It's the thing.
But it's,
you
know, so passionate.
And so we can throw this. My other movie would have been, which, if you feel like you want to go with that theory for the fucking fun of it, it's also great. Is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, where you know, it's...
Which is also about the liberating force of chaos.
Yes. And Ferris and Cameron and then... Yeah.
Yeah.
That theory makes me very happy. those are the two movies that I've probably watched the most. And I'm like, starting to see a pattern here, Gene. Do you need to fracture a part of yourself off?
Or maybe this is your release,
to do it. My idea with things is that I've always been comfortable being Tyler. I've always been comfortable being Ferris. Not that I don't have cares or concerns, but it's just always been okay to do that without putting the blame somewhere else or splitting it up. But it's fun to watch the other way.
Right. What I'm getting, though, when you say that, is that you don't fear the fracturing because... It doesn't sound like you lose yourself when you do this. It's like you're enabling your best parts.
Yeah, and, you know, again, and something especially with performers, you know, the person that you see on stage is supposed to be, you know, that's your seductive. It's, you know, they look the way you want to look. They fuck the way you want to fuck. That's it.
Yeah.
And then making that separate from your life. And I was always like, that. There's no separation for me. The person I am on stage is the person I am off stage. Because I feel like that would probably make someone crazy. Like, I don't want to have the ability to jump into another character, to be someone else, to be loved and adored that way.
Mm. Like, and you don't see it the other way? You don't have the armor thing where being on stage as a different version of yourself? I was doing a conversation at Just for Laughs just last week in Toronto with Anthony Jeselnik, who, if you know his stuff, like, he armors up his performance.
It's a lot.
And it's necessary, I think. Like, he's had to evolve this. And we talked about it. He said that sometimes he'll catch himself slipping into the voice because it's just a little different. It's a little harsher. His accent, like, it comes up a bit harder. And he did it a couple of times in conversation when we were getting close to actually talking about the material, and I could just sort of see it happening, and it was really interesting.
Yeah.
And then he would come back and say, well, I don't want to be that guy all the time. That's exhausting. No one likes him. I get to go out and taunt people, and it would come up here and there, like these little sniping insults at people in the audience, and even bounced off me a couple of times just because it was easier to get a laugh that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fine, but it was really interesting because he's been doing it long enough that he can turn it on and off.
Yeah.
But it also... Like, it's a muscle. It you flex it, and you see it.
You flex it, and you know, you can watch people totally. Their face looks different.
Yeah.
They're all, the spirit, the aura looks different.
Mm-hmm.
You
don't need it.
Have that. That was a nice way to say it. Yeah. I don't need it.
Well, I mean.
Yeah, it's just being okay with being And I don't feel like it's intense. I don't feel like it's any. Maybe it was at a certain point when I was younger, and that's just kind of an age thing that you learn.
And it have to be,
how
right?
to like how you, to turn things down.
That's the difference between raw talent and
and
honing something.
Yeah,
it's and yeah, and Fight Club, even though it was made by someone, I'm just going to keep bringing it back to Tyler Durden.
No, it's good.
Even though it's made by somebody who I think Fincher was already in his 40s when he started, or his late 30s. It doesn't feel like a honed. I mean, it is. It's an incredibly polished, slick commercial. It looks like a car commercial.
It does.
Needs to.
It does.
Gorgeous experience, textured and tactile in exactly the right way. It also feels punk and risky.
And that's young. And that's another. Yeah, there's not a. It doesn't have a weird ageism thing to it. You don't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't feel like it's a movie for teens or a movie for people in their fucking for 30 somethings or 40 somethings. You don't feel any of that. You just get immersed in this world that kind of you're like, oh, I needed some of that grit in my life, because we all need some grit. Can't be sleek all the time.
No, it's this weird exfoliation of the 90s in a weird way. Like, it's buffing them out of
it. That's a great way to say that.
That's what I get paid to do.
Congratulations.
Yes, took a while. Yeah, my superpower is feeling the movie back at people. That's what I can do. But yeah, it's about looking at all the stuff that the movies in the 90s and the culture and everything else about America tried to sell people.
And it you know, the idea of the soap. And it was literally washing
selling these
washing
selling these
off.
Rich people's fat back to them, I think, is the actual line. We're close to it.
Yes, it is.
But,
and I think, again, for me, something extremely relatable was, you know, that punk feel and that, you know, some grit and some edge. And rap-wise, music-wise, it was coming out of the very shiny suit 90s and I'm like, I don't fit in that world. I don't I grew up in Chelsea. I grew up in some punk shit. Like, this is, I don't understand that, but I understand this. And I think it was very hard for me to translate to an audience until there was kind of a switch over.
That's how it works, though, right? I mean, you find the thing that works and the cultural moment follows it. It's, I mean, Fight Club, I'm still surprised that it's a pre-9/11 movie in a really weird way, because it captures so much about the cynicism that followed. But of course it does, because it's a reaction to the culture in the same exact way that the cultural shift, like 9/11 enabled all that stuff because of Bush being in charge and immediately militarizing everything and Homeland Security. And I'm still just, that's where we are now. Yeah. And this is what I was trying to think of, is that people who saw Fight Club and didn't get it are Trump supporters now.
That feels about right.
Yeah, that's what's
that feels
really
about
weird.
Right.
Like, it predicts that. It predicts that specific. The guy behind me at the screening was getting really amped up and kicking seats. And it's like, this is fucking, this is visionary. But it wasn't quite as articulate as that. It was like, this is inarticulate. This thing is on the screen and I like it. And I don't know why. And I admit, like, he was just, he was hulking up behind me in the seat, and finally he was like kicking my chair. I was like, dude, come on. Turned around. He's like, what? And I said, do you really want to, this is a movie, would you really want to pick a fight over this? Just calm down.
I'm like, no, you just want to pick a fight.
Yeah.
And you don't actually have, there's no end game for you. There's not, you don't have an agenda. Your agenda is pick fight.
Yeah. And that's,
like, that's not the, that's not what this is about.
Yeah. But that's what's so fascinating now, is seeing people who, you know, they've been living in this world where it's going to go off at any minute, and we need an excuse. Yeah. Not a reason. Just
an excuse.
Know.
Any excuse to do anything. And, you know, anyone who can put the battery in your fucking back to say, that's okay, and say it out loud so that you don't have to say it out loud first, and you're like, that's what I was fucking talking about.
Yeah. That's,
it's scary.
It really is. And what amazes me is that, Trump has this rhetorical device. You know, a lot of people are saying, many people are saying, people are saying,
everybody's saying. Everybody's saying.
Yeah. But then there's the people who go to his performances and say he says what I want to say.
Yeah.
Like that, they aren't saying it.
They're not saying it. He's saying it now.
Which you just, you framed it beautifully. He is articulating the thing. He is putting it out there for them because they're afraid to say it. But now that he has said it, they're enabled.
Right.
I just, like, we went through this with Rob Ford in Toronto 6 years ago when this abject racist, sexist pig, just a horrible human being, rose up by saying everything he was going to do was for the little guy. He returned phone calls in his constituencies for 10 years. That's what he did as a city councilor. And people said, well, he'll call you back. Yeah, 3 a.m. when he's fucked up. You know, like he called people back.
They're like, no, he's definitely going to call you back. And I don't know if you want that phone call.
Yeah, but they did.
He's going to order you some pizzas.
Yeah.
He might not say anything.
No, he had a... Oh, yeah, no.
And but he was fun.
That's what Trump is doing. Yeah. He's following the playbook. And it's just so horrifying to watch this country go through that again because, I mean, Toronto, we're like the... We pride ourselves on being the elitists of Canada. You know, like, everybody else hates us because we're so awesome. Blue Jays are having another good year. Suck it. We're the only game in town.
You guys are fantastic.
We're having our moment. But we're watching it happen to Americans. Like, there's so many more of you. Aren't you supposed to be smarter than this?
No. The answer is no. The answer is apparently no. I think for all of our... states where we don't have to encounter that every day, there's a large, large portion of America. And I would have not necessarily have gone to these places had it not been for traveling with music.
Sure.
A lot of places I'd never want to drive through again, ever. I don't want to not get out of the car. I just want to be like, can we just go around... Because I don't... What if I have to pee? No, I never want to go back to these places again.
I'm not surprised. I'm just sad. I'm just disappointed. Like, I'm a dual citizen. I voted today. I feel...
It's incredibly disheartening.
Tiny part of it.
But for the future.
Yeah, that's basically what I was afraid of.
Yeah. And...
Because even if Trump loses, which he almost certainly will, because he doesn't have the numbers, this has been unleashed, and now it's okay. Like, it's okay to... Oh, there was a woman in...
Yeah, there's a horrible racist portal that's been opened that can't be closed. And a lot of things are, deemed all right to say or type.
Yeah.
Or even, just casually. So you're like, wow, I feel like... we're doing blatant racism again?
Yeah, that's cool.
God, all right. No, I thought y'all were just going to... internalize that shit. And then,
it's
okay.
It's starting to stick
cool.
out. It's, I mean, I assume, I'm pretty sure it started when Obama was elected because that was the first real crack. But it wasn't until Trump took the birther thing and really ran with it that he legitimized it because he was a TV star.
Yeah.
And it brought it out of the conspiracy websites and the corners and just,
climbed out of his little shadowy dark fucking corner.
It's just, it's so...
I like to think that when he climbs out of his corner, he climbs, like, up the wall. And then around.
I wouldn't put it... I mean, it might explain why his hair does that.
Yeah.
Because of gravity. I'm trying to figure out, there's got to be a reason for this. Oh, yeah, like the old woman in The Exorcist 3. He's just waiting for his chance with the shears. He's going to cut the head off democracy. But even like the Central Park 5 thing came up again today. Somebody was pointing it out. It's like, that's right. If he'd had his way, 5 innocent people would be dead just because he was pretty sure.
Yeah.
And he's been a destructive force all along. It's just that
he's been a destructive force all of his fucking life. Like, there's no good that comes out of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm glad it's almost over, but it's not over.
It's not.
It's
not. It's not. He's definitely not one of these. It's just going to go away.
Yeah.
You have to treat that wound.
Yeah.
You do have to cauterize that wound. But I would like to also discuss single frame. Yeah, which also changed a lot of things for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I want to do that. So I did.
Form or the actual single frame?
a video called Kill Screen. And let me tell you, when in your mind you're like, I want to do this single frame editing, it sounds like a really, really good idea. Until you actually do single frame editing. And so I shot the video myself and edited it myself because I was like, well, no one else, I can't explain, you know, how to do this. And again, definitely a nod to Fight Club, but also non-linear stories as it, you know, starts to tell the story of this assassin, and then those stories continue on in later albums that are all out of order, and you kind of have to piece the puzzle together.
And when would this have been? Like, roughly what year?
Kill Scream?
2003?
No.
Later?
Way later. Yeah. It took me a very long time to come back to the idea for that. Kill Scream was only a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
I think there's 20 of them. So, you know, telling the story of this assassin, and I'm locked in this room, but you don't know really what's going on, and kind of, it looks like these guys have come to get me, and you assume that they've got me in there, and you see someone, but then you never see them afterwards, and then I end up getting out by myself, and it's all kind of done very comic book style, but also with those, you have to be able to pause on the frames. And one of the frames is just a link to another video within the video. But it definitely came out of watching that and being like, what a brilliant idea. I don't want to knock that off. It totally makes sense to do something else. And I never got to do... there was a song I did on the Genius album that I did with Ninth Wonder, and I specifically wrote the song to be the exact length of the fight in the office.
Okay.
From start to finish, exactly. And I'm like, I think I was on, I just signed to Warner, and I was like, all right, so this is what I want to do for the video. And they're like, yeah, we're not going to do that. We're not going to do
just
that.
Just flatly no.
No, we're trying to, like, no. No. No, you cannot beat the shit out of yourself for 3 minutes. And I was like, I feel like it would be a really great idea.
It kind of would.
Come on, you guys. And then tried to get the video done ourselves, and we were just doing too much. But I remember...
God, you'd have to have fight choreography. Yeah, it would be really complicated, but not possible.
I think they were just not down. And again, it was also the idea of, like, I can't be on, you know, a label. I can't do anything. Because I feel like I need to beat myself up in some videos. I feel like things need to be really bloody. I'm fine with things being really bloody. And I'm pretty sure that they are uncomfortable with marketing their... new female rap artist with ultraviolence.
But if you're doing it, like, it's so weird that
I was like, well, it's not like someone else is hitting me.
Yeah. And if you're clearly, if it's not even ambiguous about it, but if you're the one who's driving it creatively, again, we come back to what it's they're trying to outthink their audience and figure out what to steer away from.
And I'm like, I get it. I'm like, but, you know, think of all the people who actually do get it. And for my market, that definitely works.
Mm-hmm. Well, plus...
And then, you know, I just waited years to do Kill Screen, and it was fine.
But it was complicated.
It was very complicated. It was very complicated. I think, yeah, Kill Screen is actually the reason that Hodgman and I became friends. And he had seen it on Twitter, and he was like, what the fuck is this shit? This is amazing. And I was like, oh, thanks, hey.
Nice.
Yeah. And, you know, being subversive in any way just makes me happy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I get what you did there, but I still fucking appreciate it.
Yeah. I just, yeah, it's it's great to see it. It was great to see it become understood over time, because it, you know, it tanked. Well, it didn't tank, but it didn't do really.
It didn't do well,
and it struggled. And then I think it was one of the first serious DVD special editions that 20th Century Fox ever produced. Certainly, it had the original packaging was very different from a case, and they were really proud of it. I was covering home video at the time, and I remember getting an early heads up, and they sent us the check discs in the packaging, and they said, "There's cool stuff on the DVD, but actually play with the box."
There's a lot going on there, and again, very much, you know, like all aspects of the film, of going back in and being like, there's a lot of stuff you're missing. Yeah. You could watch this for a long time.
Yeah. It's the termite art that Manny Farber talked about, where you there's stuff going on underneath
stuff
it.
Stuff going on underneath
the beams and the bones. Yeah.
And I really understand making art like that, or whether it's music or writing or whatever it is. There's just, put some levels in your shit.
Yeah.
I need some levels to my shit.
Yeah.
I also forgot that it was a great way for me to figure out to stop dating someone immediately.
But if they... Sorry, no, you explained this one. I don't even want to put words in your
mouth. You know, the acid burn scene is basically nothing else... But he actually says, "Why are you doing this to me?" Mm-hmm. And the rest of the scene is he's dragging his hand across the table. He explains exactly the fuck why. Like, you could not get more in depth than that. So the scene is happening, and I'm sitting there, and no joke. Like, as soon as he dropped on the floor and he's holding his arm, and this dude was like, "Why did he just do that to him?" And I was like, "You have to leave. You have to get up and leave right now."
That's it. There's just no potential connection.
There's no future here. It wasn't like we got to the movie at the same, like, at different times, or you were in the bathroom. And, as many things are not explained in Fight Club, the one scene where he's like, "This is fucking exactly why this is happening right here. You didn't get that." Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You almost kind of want to send him to the Wikipedia page afterwards, like a few weeks later, just email it, just in case there's a chance.
I am that person. To send an entire package and then possibly a singing telegram explaining the entire scene again. Be like, "Did you get it now? Did you get it? Was that it?"
You can't let that stuff go. People need to be helped.
Yeah, so that helped me. Because I might not have known until later. I needed to know that he was an idiot. So thank you, Fight Club.
It's funny. And The Woman I Married, the first movie we saw together, was Panic Room. It was a Fincher film.
How did it go?
It was good. It was good. We'd been dating for about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And it was...
That's a good, heavy two-week film.
Yeah, like, I mean,
let's see how this shit goes.
She was interested, and I was like, well... In the movie, I mean. And I was like, well, it's a press screening. Come see it with me. And it was a public 7 p.m. sneak the week before it opened, and... We saw it, and it was really... It's pretty good. It's not his best work, but it's fun and involving, and it's got all that weird camera shit that he was so invested in. And now he's gone the other way, and everything's so calm and serene.
Sometimes, you know, you're just at that point.
Yeah.
I'm about to do all this. I'm done. I'm done. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, because now the idea of a David Fincher date movie is Gone Girl, or The Social Network, and it's just like, oh, really? You're going to just watch people be horrible to each other?
Yeah.
And it's great, but Panic Room was, you know, it's a straight thriller. It's not, I think, wasn't it supposed to be his comeback after Fight Club? Because it was a commercial picture that he made right away.
I don't think
there was anything between the two.
Oh, shit, I went to see that in the fucking theater. That made sense.
Yeah. And it was just good. It was just craftsman work. It was really solid. Good performances. Jared Leto's in it. He's, It's rearview mirror stuff.
I feel like that's every Jared Leto. But, you know, hey, if you want to watch something beautiful be destroyed, then you watch Fight Club.
Yeah,
in case you feel like you're in a place.
Yeah. So the final question on the podcast is always also the same, which is, and you've more or less answered it, actually, which is happening more and more often these days. I think I'm leading people somehow. But what of Fight Club is in your creative DNA? What did you take from it? And it sounds like you've been using it all along.
I've been using it for a very long time. I think that right now in my life, I get how to really use it. And really, really coming all the way and being like, no, I'm literally starting a group in a basement. Okay, so we're really doing this. Will there be homework things similar to Project Mayhem? At a point.
Do you have a name for it?
Yeah, it's called the Church of the Infinite You.
Nice. That actually lines up and with your stuff really well.
Our logo is the infinity symbol with the heart, and it's save yourself. I'm not here to save you. No one else. Don't give your power away to anything else. It's about, you know, you coming here not to listen to me or to be like, I'm, you know, following what Gene says to do. It's to find your own savior and your superpower within in order to be great.
But no acid, no vinegar.
I don't know.
Not yet.
You gotta start slow. You can't, like, acid on the first day.
I mean, you can, but no one comes back.
Yeah. Oh, or if someone comes back, you got to turn them away.
Okay, good point.
Because they're the loose cannon.
That's your Robert Paulson.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Good. Okay, so it sounds like you have a good...
Damn it, Bob.
You're establishing a baseline.
Mm-hmm. No acid burns the first day. Third week.
Mm-hmm.
Third week, face acid burn. Just full on.
So you are making Jared Leto jokers then?
Yeah, I am.
You can have
Jared Leto will actually be there. Actually, for our fourth week, we will just be beating the shit out of Jared Leto, which I feel, you know, would kind of be good for everyone.
We've reached a point where, yeah. I mean, I just, again, I've never met him, and I'm sure he's a human being, but
I wonder,
the whole thing about Suicide Squad, where he was shot in Toronto, and so the story was that he was mailing people used condoms and things, which they immediately walked back. Oh, you didn't hear about this. Google this horrifying four-word combination, Jared Leto Joker research. Viola Davis is quoted as saying it never happened to her because she wouldn't have put up with it.
You guys, I'm just holding my head in disgust. I just want you to know that. Right
I think
now.
That'll come through on the audio. Okay. People can hear it.
That's the sound of that.
Yeah. And it's just like, I get it. I was young once, but you don't have to do that. It's the Olivia thing, right? Like, darling,
you don't,
just act.
You don't. And also...
I think you're probably right. There is, it was announced yesterday that there will be an extended edition of Suicide Squad. Previously, David Ayer said there wasn't going to be one. They've added 13 more minutes, and I really, honestly hope, truly hope, that none of them are Jared Leto. That's
fair.
Yeah, right?
That's
all I want.
Okay, here's a terrible replace... Brad Pitt.
In Fight Club.
Jared Leto. How do you feel about that?
I want to say that 1999 Jared Leto probably could have been interesting. He wouldn't have been as...
Dynamic.
Yeah, as self-aware. This is the great thing about Brad Pitt.
Jeez. Yeah. We didn't even get to the ridiculous fucking chops.
I want to my theory is that the first time Jack sees Tyler, he's actually seeing Brad Pitt in an airport. That's the real Brad Pitt.
Yeah. And I'm fine with that. And he took that. Yeah, and he was like, this guy.
Yeah. I think there's a previous flash.
There is one.
But it's all...
In the
photocopy room, right? The first time he appears? Copy of a copy of a copy?
Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to take
that. That's okay, because we're still seeing it all through the narrator's perspective. I want to believe that David Fincher first met Brad Pitt and he was dressed like that. Because...
I want to believe that just for my life to be okay.
Yeah.
I want to believe that Tyler Durden existed somewhere. And he was like, yeah, wear this. We're going to go with this fucking look right here. You had a bathrobe. you had a dirty bathrobe.
Yeah. And Pitt was...
That you could look amazing in.
Fearless at that point in his career. Like, just doing... I mean, okay, there's 7 years in Tibet, but I think that was just accent work. But I was on
that
the...
That was a job that needs to happen. Yeah. When was Snatch?
The following year, 2000.
Yeah. Oof.
But I'm thinking, like, I was here. I was in New York in 95 for 12 Monkeys for the press junket.
Oh, shit.
Everybody forgets, right?
Oh, so...
Okay.
Fuck. Yeah, a lot of my time-traveling assassin stuff definitely based on 12 Monkeys. And
when you mentioned Told Out of Sequence, my first thought is always Legete or something like that.
And the idea of... So if you happen to see New Yorkers, any posters or things under things that may be ripped off, the idea of doing non-linear things and starting this church, so it, you know, sort of looks like it's coming from the past or the future, and you can't really figure it out.
Cool.
Oh crap. Maybe I just really like Brad Pitt.
Well,
he's been in some really good.
Yeah, he was. We didn't meet in the 95 junket. He was supposed to be there and he couldn't make it for whatever reason. He couldn't get out of Los Angeles. I know, because he would have talked then. Like, he would have been unprotected. Well, not unprotected. There was a machinery already, but he would have absolutely been willing to discuss stuff now in a way that then in a way that he probably isn't now, or able to now because there's so many NDAs and phalanxes of publicists surrounding them. But his stuff in the 90s, like, he was
a very special energy.
Yeah, Thelma and Louise to 12 Monkeys to Fight Club is a logical evolution.
Yeah.
And a really interesting artistic one. I think just because he's pretty, he's not taken seriously.
And I think, I enjoy it when you get to see pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think it's fair to let that, you know, kind of be a joke when, you know, actors are like, well, I'm too pretty to get those kind of roles. And then to just be like, no, I'm going
to
do it.
Yeah. You have to be willing to take them and chase them.
I'm going to fucking go for it.
Yeah. And Gilliam said that, because that's why I did the junket, was to meet Terry Gilliam. I came out here I went in dreading it because Gilliam had been struggling and this, why remake Legete? What was the point? And then you see it, it's like, oh, of course. All of these people had to do this thing.
It was great.
And everybody was talking about Pitt because he was absent.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just saying, like, they were in awe of him. Bruce Willis says that he couldn't look at him half the time because the eye thing freaked him out.
The eye thing was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And the stuttering or the kind of that halting delivery he did, it leads to...
It's unsettling. It was very unsettling. Mm-hmm. And, something else that I really, really enjoy is making people uncomfortable to make them comfortable.
Yeah.
And it's okay that things have to be fucking unsettling to get the point across. And I'm not all right with, you know, having to deliver things in a more calm way. Like, you can just say what the fuck it is, and possibly that's jarring, but only because we fucking need to get to it.
Yeah. No, it's what Fight Club doesn't do. You can take a prescribed path and follow the thing that everyone else does because it's easier that way. And it's the path of least resistance, and it's the way that you make $200 million.
Yeah.
And and you don't get, like, well, it's Fincher and it's another Fincher and Pitt thing. It's Seven, you know the famous story.
Yeah.
The head in the, like 20 years from now, people are going to be talking about seeing that movie on TV with the head in the box. And this is made by people who want only to make movies with heads in boxes. And even though this has a happy ending, kind of.
Yeah, still head in a box.
Yeah, it's.
So there was still head in a box.
It is so, it's such a great, weird choice. I'm so glad you picked it, because it really, it's, I'm worried that it's in danger of being not forgotten, but misunderstood again.
I think we've actually gotten, like in a weird, I think misunderstanding follows clothing trends, mm-hmm. cycles, like every 20 years.
The economy how does it work? The economy goes down and the headline for the hemlines go up?
Yeah.
That was the old rule?
And all the, you know, 20 years ago fashion are back in fashion. So yeah. all the 90s things are back.
I was there the but first they're time not we did back.
Oh, Jesus, do you know Jenko jeans are back?
Is that Jesus the high-waisted Christ. Thing?
No. Those are the giant jeans. Like,
Like
rave pants, but, like, bigger?
Okay, why?
Because it's the 90s now. Yeah, because
Full House reruns are... Because right. Fuller House is back.
So all 90s fashion is back. All of those things are back. And it's hard to kind of have to explain that and be like, I don't want to relive this. And you're reliving it incorrectly.
Yeah.
Because I also think we're at a point where... not respecting things that happened in the past are happening now. And that wasn't necessarily a thing in the 90s.
Yeah. Nostalgia was different then.
It was.
I'm nostalgic for nostalgia. Oh, Christ.
But, damn it.
Well, it's like, have you seen Stranger Things, the Netflix series?
Yes.
It's pleasurable.
It's lovely.
I like it, but it doesn't, I don't think it transcends its source material. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it is... If you've read the King novels that it's riffing yeah. on, it can only go one way, and it does that. And I didn't mind it. I enjoyed watching it. But I'm stunned by people who, like, and the more I hear about it, it's people who weren't there the first time.
That's and that's what happens. I'm like, oh, you didn't get to actually yeah. see the thing. And they did it, and they did it well, and I enjoyed it. But I was also there for the original thing, right. and I know that it's not the thing.
Yeah. It's the difference between people who were there as adults and the people who were there, or, yeah. or teenagers even, and, yeah. or the people and the people who watched it on cable years later and are just doing it again. Like, there's that moment where we first see Eleven in the Upside Down and they rip off Under the Skin.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to do that. You could have done something different.
There's you know, a lot of those interesting choices, and I think, I'm like, listen... Even if you would just, like, the opening credits and they're on bikes, they're kids, it's great, the font, you yep. got it. You could have just started a whole new thing.
Yeah.
Same setting, but you guys are old enough to know that there were other ways to do that.
Yeah. They're making comfort food.
It's good.
It is good.
It's comfort food. It's frozen comfort food.
Yeah. Yeah,
I can reheat it.
Yeah, exactly. As soon as
it's nice.
Yeah, as soon as it's reheated,
it's nice.
Reheated. The other game I play is who would remake the thing? Like, not the actors. Who would you cast in a remake? That's a different and fun question. But, like, who would be dumb enough to try to remake Fight Club? It's like Jaws.
The guy who just did Mr. Robot.
That's true.
It just fucking happened.
Yeah. Good point. Who would you cast, though, in a proper Fight Club remake? Like, who could do it now? Channing Tatum. I want to see Channing Tatum. He'd be great. But he should play Jack. He should play the narrator.
Shit.
I mean, actually, now that I say that, I want it to be Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill.
Now I want it to be Tom Hardy.
I don't know that he could do the comic. Oh, yes, he could. He can
yeah.
do the comic. Yeah, he can do that.
Tom Hardy's crazy is one of my favorite things in this world.
Yeah.
And it's a very soothing yet really fucked up crazy. I think Tom Hardy's the only person right now that if I see something, I'm like, oh, Tom Hardy's in it. Yeah, no, I'll go. Because I just want to see how he approaches it. Yeah. And I'm just always interested in his approach. He's he's always very enjoyable to watch.
He is. We've never met, but I want to so badly, just because I want to meet him with my dog. Have you seen the, like, the thing of him with dogs?
He is. I don't know.
He has at least.
See, I stay away from the Tom Hardy personal thing. I don't even feel away. I just want to see him act.
Just give yourself an hour and look at Tom Hardy with dogs, because
I hope it's just a Tumblr.
It kind of like Tom Hardy, like 20 dogs. Of them, yeah. But that's, I mean, just Google Tom Hardy dogs. Like he there's a photograph of him with the dog, with the puppy from The Drop.
Mm-hmm.
One of two. They had two puppies, but he kept them with him the whole shoot. And there's this one shot of him just holding the dog. It's clearly cold. He's zipped the dog into his jacket, and it's licking his chin, and he is unconsciously licking downwards just to sort of lick it back, and it's just the most human thing.
That's just fucking adorable.
That's what he should, like, you know, put a person with animals and you can see who they really are, and he just clearly, he's potty about dogs, and he's just great. And yeah, I
damn
can see it, that.
Tom Hardy, damn you.
Okay, so Hardy and Channing Tatum.
I'm not, no, that's too much. That's too much shoulders. It's a lot of pasty shoulders.
Fight Club 2.
We need smaller.
So who would you cast as the narrator if you're using Hardy as Durden? Because this could be fascinating. I would want. I'm trying to think of Marla. Emma Stone could do it. Maybe she'd have to dye her hair.
I'm not mad.
But I'd
at
watch that.
That. I'm not mad at that.
Well, because she's young enough to.
Yeah.
I was trying to think of who else could maybe do it.
I'm not mad at that.
And for Jack, I still like Jonah Hill. I still think that could be fun. Because he can do angry, too. You could sell,
no, I've,
like, you
I've,
could sell
I've
both sides,
it.
Right? You could sell the angry side of Jack. The,
I
the
think
real
that
one.
That'd be a crazy-looking matchup. And also a great-looking matchup.
Yeah.
Also, congratulations to Jonah Hill on doing more shit.
Yeah. I got to talk to him about War Dogs when he came through, and he was being really weirdly, like, he wasn't taking responsibility for his choices in a way that I found really interesting. And it sounds like I'm, like, accusing him of something, but what I was trying to talk to him about was how somehow he's become the guy that you trust with all the exposition to make it interesting, to make it fun. You know, Moneyball, Wolf of Wall Street, War Dogs, just these giant reams of data that he has to deal with, and he can make it interesting, and you learn and you listen and you pay attention. It's like, oh, I just take the role, you know, like, I just make the movies, I don't really think about that stuff. It's like, yeah, but you choose to take the roles.
You're consciously making these. It's okay to say,
are you drawn to it, or
maybe he's
seeing,
maybe he's fucking not.
Yeah,
maybe he's fucking not. Okay, take it back, Jonah Hill, never mind.
No, he can still do it. Just because he's flawed, it doesn't make him less interesting. I don't know,
but I feel like he's busy now.
Fine.
Cast Jared Leto to get his revenge.
All right.
Oh, I need a good Marla singer.
Wait, you're not suggesting Jared Leto play Marla?
Yeah.
Because we can't have that. I mean, there are some lines that shouldn't be cast.
My thanks to Jean Grey, who starts services at the Church of the Infinite You on Sunday, October 30th. You can find out all about it if you follow her on Twitter at Jean Greasy, all one word. And you can buy Jean's music at her Bandcamp page, jeangray.bandcamp.com. You can find Fight Club on DVD and Blu-ray from 20th Century Fox Home Entertainment, and for sale and rental on iTunes. It's also on Google Play in Canada, apparently not in the US right now. It remains one of the most important movies of the last 20 years. As always, you can find me on Twitter at Norm Wilner, and elsewhere on the internet at nowtoronto.com. You can also find this podcast on Twitter at Semcast, S-E-M-Cast, and on the web at someoneelsesmovie.com. If you want to leave a review on iTunes, that would be very kind of you. This week's call sign is, let's just go with Never Trump. Thanks for listening.
All of us, I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.